offering my most loving pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. Dear listeners, I welcome you to this week's episode of the Gita series, but we are not going to continue with the chapters that we are going through right now. I've just completed the third chapter, and a summary of the third chapter is pending before we proceed to the fourth. But before that, today being a special day, I think those of you who have been tuned since the morning would know that today happens to be the day 17 years ago Swami walked into this very premises and inaugurated the Radio Sai studio, and we are marking that day. Today is not going to be very different from what we do usually, but we thought it would be nice to do something a little different, but at the same time in line with the topic that we're going through. Another series that has been very, very popular and was in fact aired at this very slot from 7:30 to 8:30 on Thursdays is the Shravanam Mananam Nididhyasanam series, which I had the opportunity to be a part of and which was very well received by all of you. Thank you for all the love that you expressed when we went through that series. And as, of course, we are very well aware that that was for how profound and beautiful the 1990 Summer Course series and the 91 Summer Course series was. Very little to do with our contribution, I'm sure. So in a way, today's episode is going to be a coming together of the Gita series and the Shravanam Mananam Nididhyasanam, because I have with me Brother Sai Prakash, who was very much part of that series. In fact, we started it together. We had a wonderful journey of over a year as part of the Shravanam Mananam series. And today we're going to do something which is going to be on the Bhagavad Gita, but little in the line of Shravanam Mananam. And I hope as much as it would be enjoyable for all of us to go through this experience, it would also be a very good learning experience, because the text or the article that we're going to go through is very, very important. But before I tell you what it is all about, let us all offer our most loving pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet, and let's invite Sai Prakash to join all of us. Sai Ram, Sai Prakash.
Sai Ram, Sai Ram, Prem. It's quite nostalgic to be back at this hour of the day.
Right.
And everything is satsang, and we had a wonderful recollection of Swami's visit to the studio this afternoon. And like Arvind rightly mentioned, every time you go back to that, the events of that day and think about it, you get new meanings to what Swami has told. And in a sense, I think it also reflects how our understanding is growing of what Swami is actually trying to tell us.
Right.
So we see new meanings. And just like you mentioned, the Shravanam Mananam Nididhyasanam series was completely divinely orchestrated, like everything else, of course. But that series was something very, very special, because that was the first time we were trying out something like that. I think one of the major concerns we had at that time, which we still have today, is what are we going to add to Swami's discourse? Or what are we going to add to what Swami is already narrating? Because generally the format of a discourse is when Swami starts off with a padyam, and then he takes a topic, and it's almost as if he gives the topic, he gives a concept, and then he illustrates it with a contemporary analogy, and sometimes even goes into a chinnakatha or a story to, you know, expand on that. So all his discourses are very, very lucid and very, very simple to understand if you have that orientation and interest. So what exactly are we going to add? So the format that we followed for Shravanam Mananam Nididhyasanam was that we would play a portion of Swami's discourse and then discuss. Initially we thought, let us summarize it. That is what we thought. But then it also led on to discussion, because related topics from different discourses of Swami and from other literature was also brought in. And of course, the 78 or 79 episodes that we did over 1.5 years, you must remember how we had several guests for the show.
Right.
And each of them came with their own perspectives and their own understanding of those concepts. But also what was very, very interesting was the way Swami orchestrated the whole thing was, if you remember, many of the people who actually came for the show as guests said that that particular series had a great impact on their lives.
Absolutely. I think I recall Bhagya sir was there. He was one who said it was a very important series for him. And Sonam sir was there.
Yes.
I think exactly during the discourses where Swami was talking about science, we had Professor Venkatraman with us.
Correct.
And Rangarajan sir, who was a student at that time, he was there for a few episodes.
Correct.
So in that sense, I think very, very appropriately, Swami sent the right guests, and it looked like we picked out those guests for those portions, but I think that was not the case.
It was not at all the case. And that surprise element at the end of the entire series was something we can never forget. So just to recollect that beautiful moment, dear listeners, what happened was we actually started discussing the 16 discourses of the 1990 Samashava series. We would play a portion of the discourse, maybe 5 minutes or 6 minutes, and then we would discuss and summarize that and go on to the next segment. We did not miss out any segment from the audios of the discourses that we had. We had the recordings of the audios. Now, at the end of the 16 discourses, the discourse which Swami gave on the Guru Purnima of 1990 was on the similar topics. And so we thought, let us conclude the series with that particular discourse, because Swami had kind of summarized the entire summer showers in that one particular discourse. And when we took that discourse, and as we were going ahead, just to narrate the way it actually happened, I was, I think, in Hyderabad or somewhere. And Prem, who was actually preparing the discourse for airing on the Thursday, he said, he called me up and he said, "You won't believe what's happening." I remember those words. And I said, "What's happening?" He said, "My God, this is absolutely stunning, because the last line of the last discourse, the last line, Swami suddenly makes a statement which was quite out of, you know, relevance in the conversation or in the topic that Swami is actually discussing. Suddenly, out of the blue, Swami makes a statement saying, "This is Shravanam Mananam Nididhyasanam." And immediately after that sentence, Swami sings his bhajan, Hari Bhajana Vina. So in a sense, Swami showed us that he was orchestrating the entire show. And way back in 1990, Swami said, "There will be two people who will come and who will try."
It is very, very momentous in a sense, you know. I still recall I was sitting in the bhajan hall in the mandir.
Okay.
That was a time when we used to do the audio broadcast from the bhajan hall.
Right.
And I was preparing the clips from there.
Correct.
We had a system there, so simultaneously we used to do our work. Yeah. And that's when I heard it. Right? And so, though it is actually an act of indiscipline to make a phone call from Mandir, but it was so thrilling that actually I had to call you right away from there and say, "Hey, you know, this is what happened."
It was so thrilling, because even in the written matter, in the text that the book trust had actually brought out, the written text of that particular discourse, this line was omitted.
Right.
Because they didn't see a connection to the previous line.
Right.
But it was there in the audio.
Right.
So, I mean, when Swami says that as he stands up to give a discourse, he's speaking at several levels to different people of different levels of, you know, evolution, and also there is no past, present, future. So it's completely magical.
I think that's why that particular series was very, very important.
Yes.
I wouldn't say that that's the first time we did something on Swami's message.
Right.
But I think personally for all of us who are involved, I think that was one discourse where, I mean, we had a lot of trepidation, as you said, but very importantly, because as I was just sharing with some of the devotees I had the opportunity to talk with, the personality of Swami is so very powerful.
Correct.
Whether you're a devotee or a non-devotee, that personality is so imposing. You know, as a devotee, you fall in love with that love with that persona. You get so enamored by that. If you're a cynic, if you're a non-devotee, you have enough things to be distracted by, right? Swami's life has got so many things that can put you off.
Right.
So it actually takes that one step further to go beyond that form, beyond that, you know, loving nature of Swami, and look at what is important, the
Correct.
Message.
Correct.
And I think that was what the Shravanam Mananam series was all about, to to sit and listen to Swami. And, you know, there are these discourses where Swami says, I think in Thrai when Swami was speaking, Swami was saying that, you know, when I give a discourse, these students sit there and right in front of me, and you should look at their face. their eyes will be fixed on Swami, their mouth will be open, and they'll be like, it'll appear like they're drinking in every word that Swami is speaking, but actually they're not. And that's so true, because we used to be sitting there and we would be so lost in, you know, Swami's form in front of us. Right. So in that sense, the series was an opportunity for us to, you know, express our love for Swami through our the importance we gave to Swami's message.
And actually, that series was the first after a gap of, I think, 8 to 9 years.
Right.
When
right.
Swami did not have summer showers, summer courses. And it was so beautiful, the 16 discourses. There was a gradual step by step, you know. It's almost like a properly well-planned and laid-out syllabus. So at the end of that, you want to write a mid-semester and end-semester exam. It's a proper subject for thesis. It was like a proper, you know, expansion and rendering of a deep concept. And very scientific. Actually, that particular series was very scientific. So that was something very, very beautiful. And after that, what we did was we took each line from that series and brought them out as posters.
Right.
Because each line was so beautiful, and that entire series of posters on the 1990 summer showers is still available on Radio Sai. So, dear listeners, many people have actually used these posters for their exhibitions and for displaying or for, you know, clarifying a particular concept. They have found these posters very useful. So anybody is free to take them and use them as they please.
Right. So I think with that, dear listeners, coming to what we're going to do today.
Right.
Even as we are going through the Bhagavad Gita, we have the reference of Swami's Gita Vahini. We have the reference of the 1984 discourses. But then there is this document which we thought is very, very apt, because in the May of 1973, in the middle of Swami's summer course, summer course was in progress, Swami went to participate and inaugurate what has actually become very popular after that. And even before that, of course, one or two sessions were held, what was referred to as a Gita Gyana Yajna, which was started by Swami Chinmayananda.
Oh, was that the first?
That was the second. I think the one which Swami attended was the second.
Okay.
National Gita Gyana Yajna. And I actually did a little bit of Google search, and apparently the first one was held way back in 1950s.
Okay.
So this must have been a
revival of that.
So it was held in Bangalore. Swami was the chief guest. He inaugurated it. And apart from participating in the inaugural ceremony, Swami penned down an article.
Correct.
As you know, as his benediction for this entire Gita Gyana Yajna, 3 or 4 page article, Swami has written personally in his very, very beautiful Telugu. It was later translated into English, I think mostly by Professor Kasturi. And that was published by the Chinmaya Mission. And we thought it would be wonderful for us to go through that article which Swami has written. It is not about any specific shloka, it is not about any specific chapter of Bhagavad Gita, but it is about what Bhagavad Gita is meant to do to us.
Right.
And what is the overall message of it. And I think it's a very good thing to learn that, I mean, understand that, even as we're going through the Bhagavad Gita, or even for that matter, going through Swami's discourses itself. Because as Professor Venkatraman is very fond of saying, he would say that the 18 chapters of Bhagavad Gita has been expanded into 2,000 discourses that Swami has given.
Correct.
And you can see that there is certainly congruity between what Swami says there and what Swami says in this article as his the message of the Gita. So I think what we've done, dear listeners, is we have Brother Ganesh, who has read out the entire article for us. It's in Telugu. We will be playing that article paragraph-wise. It's only in Telugu, so we will give you a short meaning of that, and we will discuss what Swami is saying there. I think it would be wonderful to do this at this point. Many of what Swami is telling here, I think we have not yet covered in the Bhagavad Gita. And as I always keep telling on the series, I am not somebody who has read the whole Gita, and even as we are going through the program, we are reading it. You know, just like how we did Shravanam Mananam Nididhyasanam.
Absolutely.
We would never get ahead of ourselves. We would only read that discourse that portion every week. Right. So more or less like that. But I think it would be wonderful for us to see the with what perspective you're supposed to go through the Bhagavad Gita.
Right.
I think that's what Swami says here. So shall we begin with the first clip?
The first clip, yes.
So dear listeners, once again, this is the article that Swami wrote for the Gita Gyan Yajna, which was done by the Chinmaya Mission in the year 1973. So this was brought out as a pamphlet and it was handwritten by Swami. In fact, the PDF that we have is a scan of Swami's handwritten article. We'll listen to that, the first paragraph of that article in Ganesha's voice, and we'll give you a brief meaning of that, and then we'll discuss in detail what Swami says there.
Adhyatmika vishyalu mamuluga nirjeevanga untai anukunuta kaddu. ఆధ్యాత్మిక జీవితాన్ని ఒంటరితనంగా ఏకాకి జీవితం గావించుటకూడనూ కద్దు. అది గీత అంగీకరించలేదు. మానసిక రాగద్వేషాలతో నిమిత్తం లేకుండా మానవకోటి యావత్తుతో ఏకమై పరిపూర్ణమై ఉండగలిగిన స్థాయి ఆధ్యాత్మిక స్థాయిగా నిరూపించినది గీత. ఆధ్యాత్మిక జీవితంలో సామాజిక చైతన్యమునకు ఒక విశిష్టత ఉన్నది. సాంఘిక జీవితమనగానే అందుకు ఆధ్యాత్మిక విషయాలతో ఎట్టి సంబంధమూ ఉండదనియును, ఆధ్యాత్మిక జీవితమనగానే సాంఘిక విషయాలతో దీనికెవ్విధమైన చేరిక లేదనియును తలంచుట కద్దు. ఇది సరియైన భావము కానేరదు. ఆధ్యాత్మిక జీవితం యావత్తు సమాజ దివ్య వికాసమునకు, జాతి దివ్య పరిణామమునకు ఉపయోగపడుటయే కాక జీవితమునకు అత్యవసరము.
So that's the first clip, and probably I'll just read out what Swami is saying there in English and then we can discuss about it. Swami says, some may feel that doctrines relating to adhyatmic life are dry and lifeless. Others may feel that one who wants to lead an adhyatmic life should estrange oneself from society and lead a secluded life. But Gita does not accept these views. Brushing aside the usual likes and dislikes, raga and dvesha in life, considering them as trash, momentary and of no real value, when one enters society, lives together in perfect harmony as one family, then it becomes real adhyatmic state of life as envisaged in the Gita. Adhyatmic life has an important role to play in the life of the society. In fact, I think that was translated wrongly. The actual statement that Swami is saying there is social responsibility has a role to play in spiritual life or
right.
adhyatmic life.
Yes.
Some may feel that adhyatmic life and the life of a group or the society have nothing in common between them and they are poles apart. This view is incorrect. Adhyatmic life with its doctrines is essential not only for elevation of the society and the healthy development of the caste or nationality, but is essential for the very life of the individual. So that was the first portion. It starts off with, I think, a very, very important aspect. In fact, we've discussed this even in the initial stages of the Bhagavad Gita. Swami tells in the 1984 Bhagavad Gita series, there are a lot of people who say that Bhagavad Gita professes a life of sannyasa, of giving up everything, sarvasanga parityaga, giving up all your relationships and going away. And Swami very beautifully says, how many people have read the Bhagavad Gita and taken up sarvasanga parityaga? Right? And then Swami adds very beautifully, Arjuna, who was the recipient, himself was discouraged from becoming a sannyasi and was made to act.
Correct.
Then how can you say the Bhagavad Gita stands for giving up your role in society? And I think that's what Swami says here. You know, some may feel that the doctrines relating to adhyatmic life is dry and lifeless, I think in the sense of it has got no practical value in the life that we are leading. I think in that sense Swami is saying dry and lifeless.
Yeah, dry and lifeless in the sense also... no practical implication to what we are having, and also in a sense, nothing sensational about it,
Right.
So, you know, dry and lifeless, you know, what comes to mind is, there's nothing exciting about it. Because we tend to associate all our, you know, kind of excitement and all the kind of purpose with our senses. See, so the first step of a spiritual life is to control the senses. And, you know, so when Swami would talk about prayas and shreyas, for example, so defined by how you control your senses, whether you control your senses. So dry and lifeless, it might appear for people who do not understand an experience beyond the realm of the senses. So that's what came to mind as well.
Right. And I think very clearly that one statement which we said that was translated wrongly and we corrected it. Mm. I think that's a very, very profound statement, I think, or the one before that, where Swami says, you have to keep aside your raga and dvesha in life, as considering them as momentary and trash, and to live in harmony in society.
Correct.
It is not about you being spiritual yourself, but to be able to live in society and without what is happening around you bother you as much, and to lead a spiritual life. That is what is spiritual life. In fact, that's the whole essence of Bhagavad Gita, if you see.
Right.
That's the whole essence of the Bhagavad Gita, because Arjuna is, you know, constantly he says, as one of the commentators very beautifully says, there's one question that Arjuna keeps asking in different forms throughout the Bhagavad Gita. That is, can I take sannyasa? Right? Because he says, the moment Krishna says that knowledge is supreme, so he says, does that mean that I can give up everything and pursue knowledge? And even till the last chapter, I think in the 18th chapter, he asks again, between sannyasa and tyaga, what is better?
Okay.
He says, and what is the difference? And Krishna very beautifully explains, sannyasa is giving up, you know, all karma. Giving up karma is sannyasa. Karma phala tyaga is, the real tyaga. Or the real sacrifice. Beautiful. And very sweetly Krishna says, in my opinion, the second is better.
Just like Swami is saying, like, it's not necessary to give up society and lead a secluded life. See, there is, a reference to the purusharthas in the sense, ashramas of life that people had in those days. Like the vanaprastha is when you actually give up life and then you walk into the forest and so the approach to that was very different from what people consider as spiritual life. Like people who think that we have to lead a spiritual life, we have to give up society and go. That is very different from the vanaprastha stage where people have actually lived life to its complete, gone through brahmacharya, grihastha, then comes vanaprastha, and then you go to sannyasa. So there was a gradation which was proposed for way of life. So when you're talking about secluded life, so what came to mind is, like, what are you actually, you're just isolating the body from society. You're taking your body with you, and the body and the senses are coming with you. But unless you have that control of the mind, your mind is still going to be going around everything else. So in that way, it is doesn't define what actually spirituality is. So I think even in the course of this entire article, what Swami is trying to tell us is that the attitude of the mind, The understanding that we should look at the creation with is what is important.
Right.
Because the creation remains as it is. I mean, for a person who is a realized soul or a person who is not a realized soul, the world is as it is.
Right.
So it everything depends on the perception. It depends on how you look at what is.
Right. So I think this first paragraph which we read, we probably can say that Swami is correcting the misconception about spirituality itself.
Correct.
To think that spirituality has got nothing to do with society, social life, and the life that you lead in association or in reference to the people around you. Swami is saying that is wrong. In fact, one thing which Swami would repeatedly say, Swami would say the very name Sai stands for
right.
Social, Swami would say spiritual transformation association related transformation and individual transformation. So I'm going to say it should start with individual transformation and the ability to hold on to the transformation in association when you're with others. And Swami would say that will eventually lead to spiritual transformation. So there can never be spirituality which can be practiced individually all alone. It has to be in society. And in a way, that is the first thing which Swami is telling. I think in the next clip, in the clips after that, Swami is going to speak very beautifully about society itself.
Right.
This is about spirituality. And then Swami is going to say, as you were alluding to, the perspective with which we have to look at society and community itself.
Correct.
So I think we'll listen to the second clip where Swami makes that point.
Vyakti Ishwarani nundi ye vidhamuga aavirbhavinchano samajamu koodano Ishwarani nundi aa reetiga aavirbhavinchano samaja sthayiloni Ishwaratvamu vyakti dwara abhivyaktamu gaavinchute geetarthamu aithe వ్యక్తులు కనిపించి సమాజమెట్లు కనిపించదో అటులనే జగత్తు కనిపించుచు జగదీశ్వరుడు కనిపించకున్నాడు. సమాజమన్నది మరొక పాంచభౌతిక జీవి కాదు, అది ఈశ్వరుని దివ్య భావనా విస్తృతి. సమాజంలో ఈశ్వర స్వభావముండుటచేతనే గీతాచార్యుడు సమాజము నుండి వ్యక్తిని నిష్క్రమించనక్కర్లేదని నిరూపించాడు. మర్త్యుడైన మనిషిలో అమరమైన ఆత్మ ఉన్నదని కేవలం వేదాంత ధోరణిలో ఉదహరించలేదు గీత. ప్రకృతి చైతన్యమో వ్యర్థమైనట్టిది కాదు, అహంకారపరమైనప్పుడు అది వికృతం అవుతుందనియూ, అదియే ఈశ్వరపరమైనప్పుడు సుకృతమై సృష్టిపూర్వకమవుతుందనియూ కృష్ణుని యొక్క ఉపదేశము.
Reference to how a perspective towards society itself should be.
Right.
Maybe I'll just read out those lines in English. In the same way as the individual being is the manifestation of Ishwara, the Lord, the society or the community is also the manifestation of the Lord. It is the essence of the Gita that in the life of the society or the community, the Ishwara Tattva or Ishwaratva or the divine qualities should be manifested or revealed through the individuals. Just as an individual is a concrete object and visible to our eyes, and the community as a whole is invisible, in the same way, the world is a visible object and Ishwara is invisible. The community is not a separate visible person made of the five elements, but it is the divine qualities or Ishwara Swabhava which pervades in it. Because of these divine qualities, which have pervaded the community, the Gitacharya proved that the individual need not leave the community and go to seclusion for adhyatmic practice. That an imperishable Atman is residing inside the body, which may perish any time, was not proved by the Gita by merely quoting authorities from the Vedanta. Prakriti Chaitanya is not purposeless. Krishna preached that when this prakriti unites with ahankara, it becomes vikriti, and when the same prakriti unites with Ishwara, it becomes sukriti, which is useful for the creation. So, as we were saying, you know, the first part where Swami was telling about spirituality itself as not being something which has to be looked as separate from social life.
Correct.
Here Swami is explaining why that is so.
Correct.
And very beautifully saying, in the same way as the individual is the manifestation of Ishwara, the society or the community is also the manifestation of the Lord. I think that is one of the important messages of Vedanta, of Bhagavad Gita also, where he says that you are not this individual, but you are Ishwara, you are the Lord himself.
Mm-hmm.
When an individual is Lord, is God, and that is what we are trying to achieve through the spiritual idea. How can we remove that idea or that concept from the feeling that the society itself is God?
Correct.
And you're trying to run away from God to become God. It's literally like that.
See, the hierarchy which Swami talks about, Vyashti, Samashti, Srishti, Parameshti.
Right.
So, Vyashti is in Samashti and Srishti is in Parameshti. Parameshti is in Srishti.
Right.
Like you have to see man in society and God in nature. So that is how the hierarchy of individual, society, nature and God. These four Swami has given. And so here how he says, just as the individual is seen and the society is not seen,
right,
so also the world is seen, the creation is seen and the Lord is not seen.
Right.
So that's a very beautiful, it's like right, a comparison between what is seen and what is not seen. And, you know, when Swami is talking about community is also God, society is also God. See, basically it comes to the idea that you have to look at everybody around you as God. You have to treat them well. You have to be loving. You know, that kind of an approach, that that is what Swami is trying to bring. And I think that will get further clear in the coming paragraphs. But there's a beautiful episode that comes to mind, an incident which is written in Satyasa Anandadai.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very sweet incident. Swami is sitting on the veranda in the back of the mandir, and there's a lady who was I think in the late 60s or so. No, this was still in the Pathamandir days. So it was in the Pathamandir days. So Swami was sitting in the veranda region, and there was a lady who came with a lot of snacks in the evening.
Mm-hmm.
Snacks and savories and sweets and snacks she brought. And she was a well-off, rich lady who would always get a lot of this prasad, and Swami would bless and she would distribute to everybody and she would feel happy. So one of those days she had all these preparations and she came. And Swami was very nicely looking at her, and she was taking namaskar. And as she was taking namaskar, he took some of the snacks and shoved it under the towel or the handkerchief that was there around.
Mm-hmm.
He put it under the towel and he just touched it. And then he said, when she got up, Swami said, take this as prasad and distribute to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Then they asked Swami, why didn't you partake any of them? You like these snacks. You like these snacks. Why didn't you have it? And Swami said, in order to please me, she has made her servants work very hard. So he says, she made her servants work very hard to make these dishes. By making them work hard and making these dishes, how is she going to please me? So he didn't accept it. So, you know, when we're just reading this, it's so beautiful. Like, you want to, society, you have to even respect others and see the divinity. I just thought that was a beautiful.
Right. I think that learning, in fact, in one of the discourses, Swami says that when you talk about going back to that SAI, what Swami was saying, Swami says individual transformation is actually easier. Even
right,
though we think that it is difficult, Swami says, you give up smoking, you give up non-vegetarian food, and you come to the Guru, whatever he doesn't like, you give up. Swami was saying that is easy, because you are in control of yourself. But when you go into society, you do not have control over the people who come to you.
Mm.
Right? They're of different forms.
Mm.
So Swami says, forbearance, love, patience.
Mm.
These are the ways in which your spirituality should express.
Correct.
The way you speak to them, the way you kindly behave with them. Swami says, that is why society is important. I think that's why that line is so very important.
Mm.
Swami says, Prakriti Chaitanya is not purposeless.
Yes.
Which means God manifesting as creation is not without purpose. But that is a very essential step in your spiritual journey.
In fact, in 1974, in Summer Showers, there's a beautiful discourse, which is actually called Satchitananda. The topic of the, so we'll go to it when in the coming paragraphs, but the starting poem is very beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And Swami says that one can get wisdom out of participating in work. So he says, when you see a wise man working, the wise man is working, he is working only for the upliftment of the ignorant.
Right.
So when you see a person working, wise person working, and you follow the steps of the wise man working, automatically you will start getting the knowledge of the Atman.
Right.
So, you know, a wise man, Bhagawan, saints, all of them work only for the upliftment of the ignorant and for, you know, with the perspective of seeing unity in everybody. So when you kind of follow those footsteps, he says you will also get knowledge of the Atman. So the purpose, I mean, yes, you should be loving, you should serve, you should be kind, but with what perspective should you love? With what purpose, with what perspective should you serve others? Do you feel that you are serving somebody who is less privileged compared to you? What is that perspective? I think Swami explains that further.
I think in the further part, Swami makes that very beautiful point. But before we go to that, I think one more very beautiful statement that Swami makes is that, he says Lord Krishna preaches that when this prakriti unites with ahankara, it becomes vikriti.
Yes.
That ahankara, Swami would say, is the individual consciousness, the feeling that you are separate from everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Then it becomes vikriti or a form of a contorted perspective of life. Then Swami says the same prakriti unites with Ishwara, it becomes sukriti, or which means transformation towards the better, towards progress.
Sublime, it becomes sublime and it becomes with, yes. So basically it is the same Chaitanya, the consciousness. So when it is associated with the form, when it is limited to the form, that becomes vikriti. When it associated with the divine, it is.
Right, so I think so much importance is given to looking at prakriti as a manifestation of God.
Correct.
Because Swami says here and then goes on to say that is the perspective which is most important.
Mm.
And I think we'll go to the next one because Swami is making a very beautiful point.
Correct.
There. I think we'll discuss about that after listening to that.
Dharmamanna mataku aneka arthamulu kalpinchavachunu. నీతిని కూడను ధర్మమునకు పర్యాయపదంగా పరిణమించవచ్చును. కాని అది ధర్మమునకు సరియైన అర్థము కాదని కూడను గీత బోధించినది. ధర్మమనగా చైతన్యాన్ని ఏకంగా సత్యపరంగా ధరించే శక్తిని ధర్మమని పిలవవచ్చని కృష్ణుని నిర్ణయము. మనలో నుండి అవ్యక్తమయ్యే బహువిధ చైతన్యాన్ని అహంకార సూత్రముతో కట్టినప్పుడు ప్రకృతి ధర్మమనియును, యావత్తు సృష్టి చైతన్యమును ఈశ్వరబద్ధంగా ఏది పట్టి ఉంచునో ఆ దివ్య ప్రకృతియే నిజ ధర్మమనియూ నిరూపించింది. ప్రకృతి ధర్మము మన అసలు ధర్మము కాదు. ఈశ్వరబద్ధమైన చైతన్య దివ్య ప్రకృతియే దివ్య ధర్మమని హెచ్చరించింది. ధర్మ సంస్థాపనకై భగవానుడు అవతరిస్తున్నాడని చెప్పుట సంకుచిత మానవుల బంధువర్గ దేశ ధర్మాల కోసమేనని తలంచరాదు. ఈశ్వరాంతర్గతమైన సృష్టికే ఆధారమైన దివ్య ధర్మ సంస్థాపనకే అవతరించునని గుర్తించాలి.
సో ద మీనింగ్ ఆఫ్ దాట్ పర్టిక్యులర్ పారాగ్రాఫ్ ఇస్ ఐ థింక్ ద మీనింగ్ ఇస్ నాట్ వెరీ అక్యురేట్ యాజ్ డన్ హియర్ బట్ వీ విల్ రీడ్ ఇట్ ఎనీవే అండ్ విల్ డిస్కస్ ఇట్ ఐ థింక్ అట్ దట్ టైమ్ విల్ గో త్రూ ద మీనింగ్ ద వర్డ్ ధర్మ క్యాన్ హ్యావ్ సెవెరల్ మీనింగ్స్ నీతి దట్ ఈస్ రైచియస్నెస్ అండ్ మోరల్ కండక్ట్ క్యాన్ ఆల్సో బి అన్ ఆల్టర్నేటివ్ వర్డ్ ఫర్ ధర్మ. But Gita rejects this view. Dharma is the power that unifies and establishes one in truth, the Chaitanya. That is, the Chaitanya has to be established in the truth of oneness. I think that's what Swami is saying there. When the various thought currents or Chaitanyas, which are innumerable, unite with Ahankara, it is called ordinary Prakriti Dharma.
Yes.
That which keeps the entire aggregate or Samashti, that which keeps the entire aggregate Chaitanya bound towards Ishwara is called Divya Prakriti or real Dharma. The ordinary Prakriti Dharma is not the real Dharma. Gita has emphasized that the real Dharma is Divya Prakriti, that is, the Chaitanya bound with Ishwara or the truth. When it is said that the Lord incarnates for re-establishing Dharma, one should recognize that it is not for the sake of improving the ordinary Prakriti Dharma, but for establishing the Divya Prakriti or the Prakriti bound to Ishwara or the truth which has deteriorated. So I think that's a complex one, but it's a very beautiful flow from whatever Swami has been telling. The first statement which Swami makes is the word dharma, understanding the word dharma, because Swami would oftentimes say the whole Bhagavad Gita is nothing but, it can be called a dharma shastra.
Mama dharma, right. You would say the first word and the last word.
Exactly, and Swami would also say the significance of the Bhagavad Gita is, you know, in the Bharatiya tradition, there are a lot of dharma shastras. You have Manu Smriti is one, you have written by great scholars of Dharma like that. So Swami would say that Bhagavad Gita is one work, which is a Dharma Shastra. At the same time, it is also forgetting the words. I think
Prasthana.
No, Brahma Shastra or something like that. Swami says Paravidya and Aparavidya it teaches.
Yes.
It talks about morality and it talks about what one has to do. But at the same time, it is also teaching about the highest wisdom. And I think what Swami is saying here is that bringing together that idea, as you were saying, it is not merely about being good, it's not merely about being kind or compassionate, but with what idea, with what
understanding.
Right.
So here he says the word dharma cannot be, is not adequately defined with the word niti, which means morality. See, morality in society is one aspect of dharma, which is, according to this paragraph, a very, very minuscule, small aspect of dharma. But the dharma that he wants, which the real dharma, which Swami says, the Divya Prakriti is the real dharma, is identifying Prakriti with Ishvara. The perspective with which we should always see the nature, the society as aspects of God, as Ishvara, as aspects of Ishvara himself. That is the real duty that we have to do. That is the real dharma. He says, dharma is that which on the basis of truth manifests consciousness as one. So that means, what is the truth? The truth is that it is only one. It is based on that one. But dharma is that force, that power, which manifests that truth in this creation.
Right. And the other statement that Swami is making, just after what you had mentioned, and Swami says, when the various thought currents, the various chaitanyas associate with ahankara,
right.
Swami would say that, you know, everything that we do, it starts off with this idea that I am this body or I am this mind.
Right.
So every person that you come across, in fact, the entire confusion of Arjuna is based on that.
Mm.
Right. It is not that he is against killing.
Correct.
Because he's a warrior. He's done right. that many times before. It's not that he's against violence. I mean, he has been trained with the idea that somebody has given the authority to use violence as a tool.
Correct.
For the harmony of society. And he knows that. It's not that he's not aware of that. But what is stopping him, what is suddenly bringing this surge of compassion in him, it is because he's looking at it from the point of view of, I am Arjuna and these are my uncles and grandparents and all of that. So as Swami is saying here, you have all these chaitanyas, if they constantly associate with the ahankara, it becomes Prakriti Dharma. As Swami would say, Prakriti Dharma is nothing but what you would refer to as Deha Dharma.
Correct.
Like, what is your, you know, I am a son, I am a husband, I am a child, I am a student. Swami is saying that is important, but it becomes Prakriti Dharma when it is associated with Ahankara.
Correct.
You have to look at it from the point of view of the aggregate Chaitanya, that I am a part of the whole.
Right.
And real Dharma is nothing but going towards that.
Yes.
Right. As I think a few weeks back we were discussing this as part of the Gita series. Now, if you look at dharma and what is a dharmic act, anything that manifests the purpose of that dharma in an action is only a dharmic act.
Okay.
Like, suppose I look at myself as a student. What is the purpose of a student? Learning is the purpose of a student. So any action that I'm doing which is contributing towards that learning becomes a dharmic act. As a mother, to foster your children is your purpose. So any act which is in line with that purpose becomes a dharmic act. So Swami says in Dharmavaini, what is the purpose of human life? To merge in that oneness.
Correct.
To see creation as one. So any action which leads you to that purpose is a dharmic act. And that's why Swami says Swadharma is not Deha Dharma. Swadharma is Atma Dharma.
Yeah, it's also, there is this, in the 1990 Samasha was the first discourse, Swami says, Satyam Nasti Paro Dharma.
Right.
See, there is no dharma higher than the truth. And that truth is
oneness.
Is the oneness, is the identification of your true nature. See, to live in the awareness and the experience of your true nature is the dharma. Is satya, and that satya is, following that satya is your only dharma, that is the atma dharma. Now, he is expanding this to seeing that truth in everybody, to seeing that truth in society, to seeing that truth in nature, and seeing everything as associated with the Lord.
That's it. So again, it goes back to that point of what Swami started off with by saying that you, the first point is you don't search for society outside the, search for spirituality, outside society.
Right.
And the point which Swami is making here is that your role itself should be with the idea of a spiritual goal in mind.
Mm.
It might be in the society, but the goal should always be spiritual. And very beautiful, the last statement that Swami makes when you talk about dharma samsthapana as being the
purpose
of an avatar. It is this dharma.
Yes.
It is to establish each one. In fact, there's that beautiful conversation which we've quoted many, many times, which happened in the portico, when one of the devotees, Swami asked him, you know, how is your spiritual practices going on? Are you doing a meditation or whatever Swami had probably instructed him? And he said, Swami, I don't have any time. We have heard devotees say that Swami, so many pressures at work and family and all that. But this devotee had a different answer. He said, Swami, I'm busy with Swami's mission. Because he was very, very active in Swami's organization. Swami said, what is Swami's mission? Right? And then very beautifully Swami quipped saying that Swami is not a missionary, sir.
Correct.
And then Swami said, every avatar comes with only one mission. The mission is to lead you to your truth. Right? So precisely what Swami is saying here, there is only one dharma, that is that, you know, Divya Prakriti, to make you understand that everything is the Lord, including you, including every person you come with. That is true dharma, and it is to establish that dharma that the Lord comes. Nishwara is the truth, which it is this truth which is deteriorated, and it is to re-establish that.
In fact, in the first paragraph, where Swami says the manasika raga dvesha, the likes and dislikes which are projected because of the mind is the main cause for not understanding this truth.
Right. So we'll go to the next statement there, and we'll discuss after that.
పశుత్వాన్ని మించినట్టిది మానవత్వము, మానవత్వమును మించినట్టిది దివ్యత్వము. అయితే పశుత్వానికి మానవుడు తనను ఈశ్వరాంశముగా తెలుసుకున్నంత మాత్రమున ప్రయోజనం లేదు. ఈశ్వరుడే తన ఆత్మగా, ఈశ్వరుని యొక్క ప్రకృతియే తన ప్రకృతిగా ఉన్నదని గ్రహించాలి. ప్రకృతి అనగా ఒకనొక శూన్యశక్తి కాదు, అది వ్యక్తి యొక్క స్వభావం. దానికి వేరే ప్రతిపత్తి లేదు. ఈశ్వరుని ప్రకృతి అనగా ఈశ్వరుని సచ్చిదానందమైన స్వభావమే. సృష్టిలో దాని అనంత వ్యక్తీకరణ అన్న మాట నైతిక పరివర్తనను మించిన ఆధ్యాత్మిక పరివర్తన ఉత్తమ మానవ సమాజస్థాపనకు అవసరం. సామాజిక ప్రకృతి చైతన్యములో ఉన్నది ఈశ్వరుడే. దీనిని ఆత్మసంయమయోగములో గీత ప్రదర్శించింది, ప్రకటించినది. భగవంతుడు ధర్మ సంస్థాపకుడుగా అవతరించుచుండునని తెలుసుకున్నటులే భగవంతుని ఈశ్వరతత్వం మానవజాతిలో కూడా సృష్టి క్రమములో అవతరించగలదని దీనివలన తెలుసుకోవచ్చును. ఇట్టి ఈశ్వర పరిపాలనా ధర్మము తెలిసిన తరువాత సృష్టిలోని అధర్మశక్తులను గురించిన భయమో తాపత్రయమో తొలగిపోవును.
So that's the next paragraph. Probably we'll go through the meaning, and I think even as we go through that, we'll discuss.
Right.
Swami says, it is not enough if the individual merely thinks that he is a part of Ishvara. He should realize that Ishvara is his inner soul or Atman, and also that his nature is
Ishvara's
Prakriti.
So you cannot separate saying that this is God, and the manifestation of God is separate from God.
Right.
So that is what it is.
And also the nature. In fact, this is one thing which always we talk about. You know, when Swami says, I am God, you are God. The first thing that comes to our mind is, Swami, I cannot materialize like you. Or I cannot see the future like you. But Swami will always say it is that, you know, the word which Swami uses here, Ishvara Swabhava.
Yes.
It's that nature that is one.
Correct.
And Swami says, when I say that the Lord is within you or you are the Lord as Atman, it means your swabhava is also that. And that is why Swami says you have to transform to reach that state.
Yes, then he says, the Prakriti is not like an abstract power or force. It is the natural tendency of the individual. When we say Ishvara Prakriti, it is Ishvara Satchit Ananda nature. That is, its countless manifestation in the entire creation. So the Satchitananda nature of the Lord is manifested as the entire creation. That's what Swami is saying. So he says, in order to establish a superior class of society or community, it is essential that the society should surpass the limits of Naitika and lead on to Adhyatmika type of life. So Naitika is basically a morality, like Swami said earlier. We define dharma as morality, but he says you should go beyond morality and go into an adhyatmic, a spiritual type of life if you want to better the community.
And then Swami goes on to say that which resides in the Chaitanya Prakriti of a community is Ishvara himself.
Right.
And Swami says Gita expounds and declares this in the chapter on Atma Samyamya Yoga.
Yes.
And I think this is the sixth chapter.
This is the sixth chapter. There's a beautiful shloka, the 30th shloka.
Right.
There he says, He who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me,
right,
he does not become separate from me, nor do I become separate from him.
Right. In fact, those three verses, 29, 30 and 31.
29, yes, exactly.
Right. 31 is actually the yogi who knows that I and the super soul within all creatures are one, worships me and remains always in me in all circumstances.
Right.
That recognizing, as Swami was saying here, not only recognizing that the Atman within is divine, recognizing that your Swabhava is that of the Lord, and to know that it is the same Satchidananda which has formed all of these creatures. That understanding, all three of that alone together can be a yoga. In fact, it's very interesting, Atma Samyam Yoga, when I was going through, it's all about Dhyana Yoga actually. Most of it is about how to focus and how do you practice meditation. But then towards the end, after that discussion, this is the part which comes. Where Krishna says, it is not about simply sitting and meditating. It is about the ability to see the Lord in everybody.
Everything.
That is what is true Atma Samyamya or control.
Here actually, you know, we are running out of time, but this is such a beautiful point where, you know, we discussed this earlier when you were doing the Suprabhatam discussion.
Right.
The difference between a Jnani and a Vijnani.
Right.
So I'll quickly read one paragraph from the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna because that beautifully explains this. He says, the Jnani gives up his identification with worldly things, discriminating not this, not this. Only then can he realize Brahman. It is like reaching the roof of a house by leaving the steps behind one by one. But the Vijnani, who is more intimately acquainted with Brahman, realizes something more. He realizes that the steps are made up of the same materials as the roof. Bricks, lime and brick dust. That which is realized intuitively as Brahman through the eliminating process of not this, not this, is then found to have become the universe and all its living beings. The Vijnani sees that the reality which is Nirguna without attributes is also Saguna with attributes.
Beautiful. Right. We had done that during the Suprabhatam.
Yes, we had done this during the Suprabhatam. But so that kind of, you know, very beautiful. So what Swami is telling us is to become a Vijnani,
right,
is our duty. This is the real dharma that we have to follow.
Right. So should we go to the next one?
Yes.
We'll go to the next clip.
Pasutvanni minchinattidi manavatvamu. Manavatvamunu minchinattidi divyatvamu. అయితే పశుత్వానికి మానవత్వం అలభ్యం కాని మానవత్వానికి దివ్యత్వం లభ్యం. మానవత్వంలోని పశుత్వాన్ని క్షీణింపజేసి దివ్యత్వమును వికసింపజేసిన విశిష్ట చర్యనే గీతానాదం యొక్క మోదం. తనలోని అనంత సచ్చిదానందపు భావములను తన ప్రకృతి చైతన్యము పోషించుటయే సృష్టి అని మనం ఈనాడు గుర్తించాలి. ఆకాశములోని సూర్యుని, భూమిపై సూర్యకాంతిని, సూర్యకాంతి లోకాన్ని అనుభవించినట్లనే ఈశ్వరుడు, ఈశ్వర ప్రకృతి లోకాన్ని అనుభవించుచున్నాడు. ఇట్టి ఆధ్యాత్మిక శాస్త్రము వ్యక్తికి మాత్రమే కాని సంఘానికి కాదనుట పొరపాటు. ఇంట్లో మాత్రమే మనము వెలుతుర్లో తిరగాలి, బయట కాదన్న అందులో ఎంత అర్థమున్నదో దీనిలో కూడానూ అంతే.
So Swami is making a very beautiful point. He starts by saying human tendencies or manavatva are superior to the animal tendencies. When human tendencies are surpassed, it becomes divyatva or superhuman.
Correct.
And then he says it is not possible to develop human tendencies purely from the animal tendencies. Or for animals, it is not possible to have those human tendencies. But it is possible to attain divyatva from manavatva.
Yes. And he says that is the pleasant task of the Gitacharya.
Right.
The Gitacharya's role is to remove the animal tendencies and replace it with divine and superhuman nature. So he says, it will now be possible therefore to recognize that the real creation of God is to keep this Satchitananda nature in the Prakriti Chaitanya and protect it. Then he says, just as the sun shines in the world, the Ishvara Chaitanya illumines the Prakriti. The sun shines and illumines the world that we see and perceive. The Ishvara sustains this creation. So he says, it's the sun is represented by its rays and the light. Similarly, Ishvara is manifested as Prakriti.
Right.
That is the analogy that Swami is giving there. And, you know, just a small detour again. The Satchitananda, when Swami is talking about the form, the actual definition of Brahman, the description, Satchitananda, he gives in the same 1974 Samashava's discourse, very beautiful, very quickly I'll go through Satchitananda. He says, how do you recognize Satchitananda?
Okay.
In daily life, he says, everybody sees people dying. You all know that you're going to die someday.
Mm-hmm.
Is it ignorance that makes you think you're going to be permanent?
Right, right.
That is not ignorance. He says that is because of that Brahman in you who is telling you that no, your actual nature is permanence.
Right.
That is Sat. Then he says when you take a child to an exhibition or to a cinema, the child is going on asking, who is this? What is this? How is this? Why is this?
Mm-hmm.
That inquisitiveness to know, to get, to be aware, that is Chit. It is mm-hmm. the Brahman in the child that wants to know. This beautiful world it wants to know. And then Swami says, of course, Ananda. He says, we all are searching for bliss. When a child is happy and playing, nobody goes and asks the child, why are you happy? So he says, only when the child is crying, when somebody is crying, then you go and ask, why are you crying? So he says, this is how Satchitananda is manifested in our day-to-day life.
Mm-hmm.
So when you look beyond the day-to-day life and look only at that attributes of Satchitananda, you can easily connect with what is, that is the definition of Brahman. So you can easily connect with Brahman.
Right. And I think one statement which we did not emphasize much in the previous paragraph,
right.
which again comes here.
Mm.
Swami says, when you understand that once this type of manifestation of God and His nature and creation is understood, all fear and anxiety which emerge from that evil nature in society disappear.
Disappears.
Right? In fact, there is a very beautiful phrase, I think it's in the Rig Veda, which says, all fear comes from duality.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Only when there is duality, you can have the sense of fear.
Absolutely.
Right? So Swami says, the moment you say that everything is a manifestation of that same Satchitananda, what are you going to fear?
Mm.
You will not fear your own hand. You will not fear, you know, your own feet is going to kick you.
Exactly.
Right? So similarly, Swami says that there'll be no place for fear. And the very clear explanation that Swami is giving here, it is that you understand that everything is divine and your spirituality should express and should find fruition in the way it interacts with society.
It's
the
same.
Way it interacts. We'll go to the last clip and I think we'll conclude with that.
Yes.
తోటి మానవులకేసి చూచినప్పుడు రాగద్వేషములు, ఈశ్వరునికేసి చూసినప్పుడు భక్తి వినయాలు. ఇది సమగ్ర ఆధ్యాత్మిక జీవితము కాదు. సర్వకాల సర్వావస్థలయందు ఈశ్వర సచ్చిదానందమను సత్యదర్పణమునందే తోటి మానవులను జగత్తును చూడాలి. విశ్వవిరాట స్వరూపము యొక్క అంతరార్థము ఇదియే. వ్యక్తి అని, సంఘమని, భౌతికమని, ఆధ్యాత్మికమని, ఇది నా పని అని, ఇది దైవకార్యమని పూర్తిగా విడదీయటానికి వీలులేదు. సచ్చిదానందమను ప్రవాహము వ్యక్తి ద్వారా ప్రవహించి సమాజమను తటాకమును నింపి సర్వేశ్వరత్వమును సాగరమును చేరుచున్నది. కాన వ్యక్తి, సమాజము, ఈశ్వరత్వము ఈ మూడింటియందు సచ్చిదానందము అంతర్వాహినిగా ప్రవహింపజేయుటయే గీతామకరందము యొక్క సారము. మానవులు గుణప్రకృతి ద్వారా తమ బాంధవ్యాలను రూపొందించుకున్నంతకాలము దుఃఖము తప్పదు. విషాదయోగమైన దీనిని దాటి దివ్య ప్రకృతి ద్వారా అనగా సచ్చిదానందము ద్వారా సంబంధ బాంధవ్యాలను రూపొందించుకుంటే ఒకే సచ్చిదానందపు అనేకతకు అనంత ప్రకటనగా శోభిల్లుతుంది. స్థూల జగత్తునకు, మానసిక సీమకు, సాంఘిక జీవితానికి ఆధారమై మూలమై దివ్య సత్యానికే ప్రత్యక్ష రూపమైనది భగవద్గీత. మానవ స్వరూప స్వభావాలను గీతాదర్పణములో చూడాలన్నా పరమేశ్వరుడితోనూ, పరమేశ్వరుని సృష్టితోనూ పరిపూర్ణంగా ఏకమై ఉండే దృష్టిని అభివృద్ధిపరుచుకోవాలి. ఈశ్వరుడు మానవునిలో దివ్య చైతన్యమూర్తిగా అవతరిస్తాడు. శ్రీ సత్యసాయిబాబా.
So that is the end of that.
That's the end of the article. Swami starts off by saying to allow free play of one's raga and dvesha when moving about with people and exhibit great devotion when he sees God is not proper adhyatmic way of life.
Correct.
Right? A very, very clear definition that
yes.
you have, you like certain people, you dislike certain people. That cannot be a spiritual life at all.
Right.
I think it's a clear indication that if you want to know whether you're progressing spiritually, then there are lesser people that you are you dislike. You know, that line between the people whom you like and dislike, whom you can put up with and you cannot put up with, that line starts becoming more and more blurred.
He says, then he defines what is Vishwa Virat Swarupa. He says, when you see the whole world through the mirror of truth, which is Satchitananda, that is the meaning of Vishwa Virat Swarupa. And so he says that is what defines what is that Vishwa Virat Swarupa. And in the adhyatmic way of life, you should not discriminate between the individual and the society, the materialistic and the spiritual objects, or think that a particular work is yours and some other work belongs to God and so on.
Right.
So the current of Satchitananda flowing through the individuals fills up the tank, namely the society or the community, and from there flows towards and joins the ocean of eternity, the Lord. So he says it's the same stream of Satchitananda flowing from the individual to the society,
right,
to the ocean.
Exactly what the reference that we were making initially, Swami would say that S-A-I.
Yes.
It starts with I, then it goes on to the association, and then it has to come and reach the the ocean, as Swami says.
Correct.
And going back to that Vishwa Virata, Swami says that that beautiful incident between Brother Satyajit and Swami.
Yes, yes.
You know, and in the car once, when Swami asked him all of a sudden, what do you want to see?
Correct.
Right? In the sense of whose form do you want to have darshan of, which Lord?
Mm.
You know, here is Swami asking him, I'll give you the darshan of any form that you want.
Mm.
So he thought that the smartest thing to do is ask for the Vishwa Virata Darshan, where you can see all forms in one.
Correct.
Then Swami's answer was so beautiful and profound. Swami says, Roz dekhta hai, samajhta nahi hai. Swami
Correct.
Said, you see it every day, but you don't understand.
Mm.
And Swami pointed outside the window. Yes, Swami, whenever Swami would go for a drive, people would be there. Swami says, see, this is the Vishwa Virata.
Exactly. Right?
And Swami is saying that is the most important thing. And this statement which Swami made, that separating spiritual life from worldly life, from your roles and responsibilities towards family, to your this one, I think Swami says that is the greatest blunder one can do. In the adhyatmic way of life, you should not differentiate between the individual and the society.
Right. And then Swami says, as long as we follow, look at this world and our relationships through the gunas, he says, you get into problems. There are, you get into worries, and that is what he calls as Vishada Yoga.
Right.
So he said, you're stuck up in that Vishada is a problem. But if you start looking at it through the Divya Prakriti, through the eyes of Satchitananda, then that is the only way that you will see that the Lord himself is manifesting in this entire creation.
Right. And then Swami says the Bhagavad Gita concretely entitles throughout the Bhagavad Gita concretely manifests this real truth, namely the Divya Prakriti, which is the life spring of the world, the individual, man's mental environment, and the community. If one wants to see the real man and his nature through the mirror of Gita, he must develop his vision to an extent to be able to realize that God and his creation are both completely one and the same. And Swami concludes by saying, when this state of mind is developed, then God will manifest himself in the heart of the individual. So I think that is what Swami says, that this is the approach with which you have to look at this mirror of Bhagavad Gita. As beautifully Swami says, if you want to see yourself, the whole idea is that when you say that this is a scripture which is going to reveal your truth to you, Swami says you're standing in front of the Gita, but this is how you have to see.
Right.
Even though you do not have the realization that everyone around is God, the creation is God, but with that information given to your, with that understanding that I don't understand it now, but that is the truth.
Yes.
Swami says with that perspective, you have to look at it. And probably the concluding thought, when I was just going to that Atma Samyam Yoga, when Krishna says all this, you have to see me in yourself, you should see me everyone around. And Arjuna says, Krishna, this is not so easy. And when he says that you have to sit and control your mind at one point, he says, the mind is not easy to control.
Mm.
And Krishna says, of course it is not easy to control. But then with Abhyasa and Vairagya, he says you will be able to achieve it. And then Krishna goes on to say, anybody who takes to this path of trying to see God in everyone and trying to carry on their dharma, their duties, they may or may not achieve the ultimate in this birth because each one's capacities are different, but they will never lose.
They will never suffer.
They'll never suffer.
Yes.
So he says that Krishna says they will go on to be born in families which are more pious, and they will start from where they left off.
Correct.
And with added vigor.
Yes.
He says, as Swami's famous one-liner goes, I've come to light the lamp of love in your heart. The three or four assurances Swami gives. Swami says, I will light the lamp. I will ensure that it glows day after day. And I will ensure that it glows with added luster. Right? That is the blessing, and that is the word that Krishna has given and Swami has given. That take to this path, see me and everyone. Continue to do your duty, but do it with this perspective. And Swami would say, if you're a mother, serve your children as you're serving God.
Right.
If you're a son or a daughter taking care of your parents, think that you're serving Swami in them. And you don't have to do anything different, right? As you started off by saying, it is not exciting enough sometimes.
That's what.
For people, right? So with that, dear listeners, we'll conclude this week's episode. Thank you, Sai Prakash, for joining us. And,
thank you for
bringing up memories.
Such a wonderful article, going
right.
through. It's a very beautiful, different perspective to the essence of Bhagavad Gita.
Right. And we're very, very glad that we could do that. So dear listeners, we most humbly offer this effort at Swami's lotus feet. And I'll join you again next week. We'll resume our Gita series from where we left off last week. Do join me again at 7:30 p.m. next week. In a short while from now, you'll be joined by Brother Bishu. Sorry for the delay for the last segment of the day, the Vahini Satsang. I'll meet you all again next week at 7:30. Till then, take care. Jai Sai Ram.